Frankie Ice, man, it's a legend then.
He's kind of, I would be afraid. I would be afraid of beef with Frank Isola, even if I'm Lil Wayne. I feel like Frank's got people. His Frank's goons got goons, I believe. Oh,
All you
well.
got to do is look at the leather jacket.
That's right. Hello, by the way, we're on the internet now, live on a fake television show known as Debatable. This is, by the way, a very special episode. Alabaster, we're here to celebrate David Jacoby's birthday. Jacoby, special effects, sounds, flags,
No, you
anything in our
do it.
budget?
Give me the
No?
confetti drop,
Come on,
Alabaster. You do
something.
pre confetti drop. There we
There
go.
you
There we
go.
go. Wow. Oh God, I feel seen. I feel
Oh,
celebrated. I feel
those
appreciated. I feel seen. I feel celebrated. Let's move on.
tiny alabaster hands bringing in 44. 44, Jacoby.
44.
Israel Gutierrez, you are somewhere between 20 and 50 years old.
No one
How are
knows.
you doing?
No one knows.
I'm doing.
Tweet at
I'm doing all
Debatable with your
right.
guess of how old he is. We're gonna get
Give me
wide spectrum of
an
numbers.
age and a nationality, actually. If you can combine both of those, get both of those right, I think you're gonna win
There
something.
is
I'm
no
not sure
intersection
what,
of
though.
those circles that people can guess your age and your nationality. It's impossible.
Absolutely not. But there is one more mystery that we're here to solve, which is who is the person we're bringing into this fourth box, Alabaster?
So
Your
exciting.
eminent domainer.
Also a hint for my nationality, the fourth guest here.
Ooh. I mean, we tap into, yes! We
Whoa.
tap into the diaspora by bringing
That's not
in
Alabaster at all.
Big Waz, the least Alabaster person to occupy that fourth square. Kicking him out. Waz, what's up, man?
I'm good. I'm good. I just realized that Izzy Gutierrez is a Dominican man. I
Oh,
never knew
wow. Giving
this.
away
I
the
never knew this
answer.
until right now. He's technically my fellow countryman because, as you guys
Yep.
know, I'm a proud Haitian American, and
That's right.
we
Same
share an
island.
island with the Dominican Republic.
And now you share half of this screen while
Yep.
somehow deciding to dress like me. It feels like Waz and I are somehow in the same stage production of Debatable today.
It's
And
like
I
a poetry battle,
suppose
and you guys are up first.
that's right. That's right. There's a lot of snapping today on today's episode. But we begin, Alabaster, I think we got to start with the topic of the day in the NBA, which is what the hell are we expecting out of the Brooklyn Nets? Waz, I guess we should start with our first guest here. Waz, by the way, basketball expert, consigliere now of Bill Simmons at The Ringer, doing podcast
Consigliere.
audience
Is
hand
that your official
motions.
title? Was that what says in the
Yeah,
contract?
I took David Jacoby's old job. So yes, that's right. I'm the consigliere, the capo, the Tucci, underboss, you name it, that's me over there.
That's right.
Even if my paycheck doesn't reflect that.
So wait a minute. Like, the Nets play the Cavs tonight. It's the play-in tournament. It's this purgatory where the stats don't count, but everything matters, right? Like, are we expecting, Waz? Are we all expecting the Nets to just roll here?
I don't see how you could. I watched the game that they played against the Knicks the other day where they had to come back. They had to have KD and Kyrie play the entirety of the second half. I think they ended up with playing over 45 minutes, each of them, in that game to beat the Knicks. And, you know, I know you guys have watched at least some of the Knicks this year. They're not
Too
exactly,
much.
you know, the 86 Celtics,
Yeah.
right? Like, they're a bad team that the Nets took everything that they had to beat. And, you know, I think it's just their defense is just so awful. They're going to be able to manufacture a decent amount of offense. They got KD, they have Kyrie, two of the best ISO scorers in the game, just regular scorers in the game. But they can't guard people for anything. And KD was like all over the place against the Knicks. He's playing center. He's guarding perimeter players. He's doing everything. And he has to drop 40 something for them to win. I don't know why anybody would think that this team is like some anybody's idea of a juggernaut.
Well,
Pablo, I totally forgot about the fact that these stats just don't exist after the game. They just disappear. And it's like the play-in stats that they can maybe collect and hold, like, you know, for the record down the road. But right now, you could have 70, and it's just like, did that really happen?
That's correct. And by the way, I expect Kevin Durant to score something close to 70 tonight. I mean, that's why I feel the opposite way of Waz. I mean, Waz, from a basketball perspective, I mean, Jacoby, I think he's telling the truth, right? The Nets have a terrible defense. Like, it's strange that they've struggled against terrible teams. Kevin Durant should not look as bad as he did in the first half of that Knicks game. But then the second half comes, and I'm like, I think that guy, That's the guy. Second half, Kevin Durant is the guy who's going to show up against the Cavs. And I say that simply because of the most reductive take that anyone can have about basketball, which is that I want Kevin Durant on my team in the postseason. Basically, whenever possible, I don't care who else is available. I always want that guy. And I just feel like, Jacoby, what we're going to get from KD, like Evan Mobley, by the way, tip of the cap, man, right? Like a first team all defense candidate as a rookie. He's a prodigy. He's a 7-foot guard. He is a problem. I just don't think that even a guy like that is going to have a real prayer of slowing down Kevin Durant.
I'm doing the thing where I can agree and disagree with Waz extremely heavily, right? So I'll say this is, Waz is wrong about the fact that they're going to lose this evening, but it's right. All of his criticisms are right about the Nets in the postseason in a 7-game series, but in a one-off against Cleveland without Allen in Brooklyn at Barclays, like they're going to roll tonight. I would even take them against the spread if you are in a state where you can do things like that. But like, I really think the Nets in a one-off game will succeed. However, when you get to a 7-game series against Boston Celtics, that is when the lack of defense and the lack of bench is going to hurt you. But I think against Cleveland, like, if you stop Garland, like, who else is going to kill you from that team? Like, outside of Darius Garland, who, what other offensive threats do they have in uniform? Don't say Kevin Love.
No, and the Nets, I mean, look, for what we said about their defense and, you know, losing inexplicably to, like, the Hawks or the Hornets or whatever, they won their last four games, did they not, of the regular season? And they kind of had to avoid that 9-10 situation. And the thing that I love about this team, and there's a couple of teams where you could say, hey, maybe they have that on-off switch set, and this is one of them because strictly of Kevin Durant. And it's, you know, he's all about the basketball. Like, he still has that sort of weight on his shoulders where he wants to prove what he can do without Steph and Klay and Draymond. And it's all about basketball with him. Ask James Johnson. It's just all about basketball. And, like, when if you're going to say to anybody, hey, I believe we can just jump on your shoulders and get through a couple of rounds, it's Kevin Durant. And I still think even though he scored a 50 a couple of times in the end of regular season, I think we're going to see another version, another like level of Kevin Durant here. Kyrie Irving's going to come in and have his, you know, his big scoring games. But I think this is Kevin Durant just saying, look, we all sort of marveled at LeBron James doing it and sort of coming up short when he was the only guy against Cleveland and then winning it the next year. Well, I still have this sort of picture of my career right here. Like, I'm top 12 all time, and it feels like people are only now noticing it. So I think every playoff opportunity for KD is just an opportunity for him to go off, and I think he's going to do it in the play-in. I think he's going to do it in the first round. I don't think they're going to win because of that defense, but I just love the fact that he keeps us in the present. Hey, we're not talking about next year. We're talking about what Kevin Durant can do right now, whether we want to like enjoy it and see how far he can take them.
So Izzy, you mentioned Garnett inadvertently, and it reminds me that Evan Mobley is kind of the closest thing we have to Kevin Garnett right now. They use him to guard everything, switch everything, basically build a zone around him, put him at the top of the key, have him do everything defensively. But Waz, I guess the question I have, like, because I hate to feel like a casual when I talk to people who actually watch basketball, but like, I watched the Nets do to the Bucks what I think the Nets are going to basically do to the Eastern Conference again this year, which is by virtue of Kevin Durant threatening to score 50 points in a single game, he's going to challenge someone like Giannis in a series like that just because he has that. And he has now Kyrie instead of a hobbled James Harden. He's now more than a year removed from that leg injury. Like, what do you see happening here where that offense can't just compensate for all of the defensive failings of a team like the Nets?
Yeah, I think with the Bucks last year, what people forget is that their playoff defense was like historically great. And their offense was just bad, especially in the early goings of the playoffs, right? And so the Nets were able to take advantage of a team that was out of sorts on that end of the floor and pushed them to 7 games and probably should have beaten them. Yes. I don't think that's going to be the case against Boston in the first round when they eventually get to Boston or anybody else they might play in the playoffs. I think Milwaukee was a special case of a team battling some demons, sorting itself out. I know you guys have talked about Budenholzer ad nauseum, but like last year he was doing the bad Budenholzer thing with their offense where they got Giannis dribbling from 30 feet as if he's like the next Kobe Bryant instead of letting their guards and actual ball handlers initiate possessions. let Giannis, the best finisher in the damn game, finish possessions. Like, you know, like all of these things that just seem so obvious to all of us, they started doing in the latter parts of the playoffs, right? However, against the Nets, Blake Griffin was playing center for the Nets, and it was going completely fine. Like, that's just not going to be the case this season, right? Like, they were able to get away with some things in the first round of last year's playoffs that I don't think is going to matter if KD drops 60, to be honest with you. I think these teams are going to be really keyed into what they want to do and are going to be very good at executing a game plan that exploits Patty Mills and Kyrie Irving and Goran Dragic as your perimeter defense. Like, this can't work. This can't abide against teams like the Celtics.
Waz just gave Goran Dragic a little Stephen A. Rasho Nesterovich on that. Damn. The disrespect. Man.
We love Goran the Dragon, but he's older now. You can't expect him to be guarding a great NBA all-star level type wing talent.
I think one thing that's not getting spoken about enough, a couple things, Waz, I'm glad you brought up that we all had Coach Budenholzer fired when they were down 0-2 to the Nets.
Yes.
Like, we all had him fired. I remember that night after they went down 0-2, we all were like, this man is no longer going to be a coach in the NBA, not only for the Bucks, like, for no team. And then they went on to win the championship. But let's not forget that 24 hours in which they were down 0-2 to the Nets.
Real quick, bad Budenholzer. Is there anyone who is more visually the opposite of bad Budenholzer than just normal Steve Nash? Like, bad Budenholzer looks like he woke up at 3 a.m. on the futon and is being yelled at to go take out the trash, and he's like confused and disoriented. And Steve Nash in that suit, just he looks like he's basically like the coolest person.
Steve Nash he's big on the arm cross. If you know Steve Nash, he's like, he's really big on this. Just like, I've got this under control because my arms are crossed. I'm not going to say
that. He's a body language savant, for sure.
Sipped any strategy into this team, but my arms are crossed, therefore I have things under control.
That's my question. Is he, like, anybody here, like, is Steve Nash good at this? Because I actually don't know.
Well, it's funny. I was laughing because I was just, you know, that picture of him hugging Kevin Durant last year in the playoffs, like his life depended on it. And it just feels like this year's confirmation that that is his coaching strategy. Like, it's just, all right, KD, like, it's all on you, my man. And I think, you know, I don't think Steve Nash is bad at this. I think he needs experience. I think he might have, you know, benefited from years of coaching instead of years of playing necessarily, but it's also a really tough situation with a super team, and you are not the most experienced of head coaches. You're coming in here and they're basically running the place, and, you know, Sean Marks isn't the most experienced or intimidating of presences in the front office. And so I think Steve, in a basketball mind, is a great basketball mind, but in terms of running an organization as a head coach, I mean, of this particular outfit, I don't know. That sounds pretty difficult for like a rookie head coach.
I think Steve's done as reasonable a job as could be expected considering the circumstances. Like, the roster and personnel volatility has been insane, right? Like, they blew up the team to get James Harden in there. And, you know, whatever, things are going great and injuries happen and whatever. And, of course, this year, James Harden gets tired of, you know, third eye Kyrie, holistic medicine, burning incense and sage and all of that. And
that's it was Kyrie's fault. Okay.
Yeah, he was just like, all right, let me get this guy out of here. Didn't they trade for Ben Simmons, an all-star player, all-defensive team type of player? And this guy gets a bulging disc from playing video games for 9 months. It's ridiculous.
Take your time with that.
Well, I think another thing that no one talks about is Joe Harris, like the Joe Harris thing. Like, they're missing – Joe Harris is like a pretty key player for them, and no one discusses it. The same thing with Dylan Brooks in Memphis. Like, everyone talks about how great their record is without John Morant, but Dylan Brooks was like their second most important player, and he's been missing the entire season until last week.
Nobody talks about how terrible those teams are that they played, though. that's neither here nor there. We don't need to do that.
But right the Joe Harris thing is important, and one thing I've been saying about the Nets, and we're going to put a button on this, is I'm always looking forward to next season with the Nets. It's been that way for about four seasons, and I'm doing it right now, too. I'm like, oh, next year the Nets will be good, and I've been saying that for 5 years now.
Yeah, the Ben Simmons thing, man. I mean, that is the square peg in the square hole that the Nets have. Not to get super bizarrely phallic with these metaphors here. But okay, great.
Keep going.
You know, that's to me, the wait for next round thing. Like, I do wonder, I mean, Ben Simmons, 10 to 15 minutes a game, basically playing the role of either Bruce Brown or, in this case, like freaking Andre Drummond. Like that dream of the Nets, like that to me is why I felt like, oh, this feels like a favorite in the Eastern Conference if Ben Simmons is healthy. Obviously, he is not. But man, like that dude, 10 to 15 minutes a game at center for the Nets.
Sounds like the East Coast version of the Lakers could make a run if Anthony Davis is healthy. Because I get the added defensive ability, but is he a crazy rim protector? Is he? And I know he sets up his teammates, but do Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant really need to be set up if they're mostly isolation scorers? I get having the extra depth to it, but I don't know if it's going to be something that raises their level. I think, you know, more important than anything is going to be the chemistry, and they're not going to find that this postseason.
I'm of two minds here. I think Ben Simmons on a pure basketball strategy level, when teams are sending two at the pick and roll against KD and Kyrie and Ben Simmons can operate on a 4-on-3, like sure. That's very advantageous for him. Yeah, and like he's going to be good at that. However, I have a long enough memory to remember that damn Hawks series. It's freshly implanted in my brain. He sucked. He stunk up the joint. He just was not good whatsoever. Yeah. So the idea.
I mean, what happens when he gets hacked and misses four straight free throws?
Exactly. Like,
he's not making the same decisions anymore. He's getting the ball out of his hands as quick as possible.
Exactly. I'm supposed to believe that dude is going to take the Nets team, that the ninth seed in the Eastern Conference, to the scariest playoff team ever.
Seven seed. Let's be clear.
Excuse me, I misspoke. Right
behind the Bulls. Right behind the Bulls.
I'm supposed to think Ben Simmons is taking that team to the promised land after the last. Again, we talk about Anthony Davis. I watched that guy play basically at the level of LeBron in the NBA Finals, probably could have easily won Finals MVP.
That was a conversation.
Ben Simmons in the history of his life has never played even close to that well in the postseason. He's never shown that level of excellence. And we're supposed to be thinking this dude is like going to change somebody's life when he comes back from playing video games and eating popcorn for 9 months.
You guys watch the videos of him shooting in the gym, the Nets gym. Like even the shots that go in, they're not clean. They touch every part of the rim on the way down. It's just like this guy has not really fixed his J, and I'm pretty sure it's not fixed his mind.
I almost yelped the word we and said we don't need him, but I actually don't root for this team. But I don't need him to shoot. Like I don't want to defend this hill for the millionth time on this program, but on this team, right, what is he, the fifth offensive option? All you really need to do is not have him on the floor in the fourth quarter when the game is tight and they can just foul him. That, to me, agreed. Don't know what the hell's going to happen if he's on the floor. Well, I do know what's going to happen. It's going to be bad. But outside of that, everything else, all of those weaknesses get attenuated by the fact that the Nets don't need him. He's just a center for them, a small ball center who's faster than every seven-footer who's 25 years old you've ever seen.
You don't think there's coaches that just still take advantage of that? They just muddy up the game at any point, second quarter, third quarter, and say, hey, Ben's out there. Let's slow it down. Let's let that Nets offense have to stare at him and say, we really have to watch these free throws when I've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving here. Like, I just don't see – I can see a coach absolutely messing with them and saying, okay, you're going to play him. Here's the test. We're going to do it from the very beginning. We're not going to wait and see if we have to. We're just going to do it from the very beginning, and I think that's probably going to be what breaks it down eventually. I just don't think he's ready for that yet, especially in the playoffs being his first taste of it.
By the way, Izzy, I love when the trade rumors were swirling, it was always this theoretical Ben Simmons landing spots. He could be your theoretical center based solely on the fact that he can't shoot outside of 3 feet. That's it. Right. Not the other jobs that centers do, i.e. protect the paint, grab rebounds.
The Nets have been playing Bruce Brown at center.
It's effectively,
if any
too.
Any team has low enough expectations for what a center can be, it is the Brooklyn Nets.
I just don't think you can count on this guy against Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is just, you know, the most menacing paint presence that we have in the NBA today. Yeah. And it's like, oh, Ben Simmons is playing center now. Everything is great now. It's like, no, it's not.
No, you got to go ABA style, man. Just running, gunning, like forget defense, punt on it. Like, yeah, Giannis is going to get to the paint every time. You just got to have him create threes. And now I'm sounding like a person who says we talking about the Brooklyn Nets, a team I allegedly don't care about. So great.
Can't wait to tell Mina.
God.
How did Waz get the deal where he does one topic and then bounces? Like, how does that happen? I saw the email. It was like, oh, we're going to have Waz for the first topic, and then he's got
to
go.
So
like,
throw something else at him, Jacoby. Like, Jacoby. Like the Celtics listen, having Jacoby, to actively yeah. avoid that.
What else do you have to do, my guy? Like, what do you got to bounce for?
Like, you may not know this, but I do have a job. I actually have several other jobs, Jacoby. Wow. Like, I got to work just multiple 20 minutes jobs at a time. To pay these bills, man.
Please, we can only book Waz for 10 minutes. In we only have 10 Angeles, minutes of brother. Waz time, so make sure you get your shots up. It's like, yeah, he's got 10, he's like Isaiah Thomas. He's 10 minutes, he got 15 points, then he just bounces.
That's right. Waz has to take his black t-shirt to Soho House.
I got a standing booth at Delilah. I'll see you guys there next time.
Delilah? We're in Los Angeles. Philly? What are we doing? Eastern Conference Finals? I'll be there.
Yeah. Not exactly the same exclusive venue, I think, that Waz is talking about. Yeah. Yo, Alabaster, is this where we punt Waz out of the chat because now he's trying to make us look silly by being fancier than all of us? Yep, there
appreciate
he is.
Appreciate you, bud.
Yeah, thanks, thank you for guys. Not telling any stories that would get me fired, Waz.
No.
Appreciate it.
That's for the memoir, Pablo.
I know. The word rolling in the question, I was like, probably should get Waz out of here before this keeps going. Alabaster, you want to make that square real Alabaster again and bring us back to
I
the
missed
show?
You, Alabaster.
Yes. Thank you, Waz.
And Tori.
Thank you, Waz.
Thank you, Waz. We appreciate you coming on. You did the impossible. You convinced Pablo, Izzy, and Jacoby to actually take the first topic seriously. So that 20 minutes was lovely. And we will move on to what we are contractually obligated to do. And something I didn't think we would do today, though, which is talk about the Lakers. We have sound bites from exit interviews of LeBron Incredible. James and Russell Westbrook for you guys to listen to. And our question, how do you see the Lakers' dysfunction playing out this offseason?
Can we just be clear quickly that it was a joke that we are contractually obligated to talk about this because there are people who actually believe that we are contractually... It was part of the Russell Westbrook trade that the media has to discuss. Yes. But okay, not That's contractually right. obligated.
I That's still right. think if LeBron and AD are healthy, they can come back and make some noise in this year's playoffs.
Jacoby, they are from the stands.
They're still the team that nobody wants to play. Now, literally, they can't play them, but also no one wants to.
Nobody wants to.
No coach. They're probably better off without a coach then, right? Because they don't have one of those.
Oh, can I start the bids, though, for the answers to this question by suggesting that LeBron should just be player coach? Can we do that? Can we get the momentum for that at this point?
I love that. I love that.
They've done it before in L.A. Let's do it again. Come on. Can we get LeBron? I mean, the way this is going to go, and I guess we have video here we can sort of weave in, Alabaster, so let me know when you want to do that. But, like, realistically, what this question means is that we're going to be, like, doing the thing of playing back Instagram stories of LeBron and Russell Westbrook, like, rapping along the songs and trying to think, do these lyrics say anything about a hypothetical trade? Like, that's going to be a news cycle pretty soon.
Oh, God. Pablo, I just got sad. I mean, can we just not talk about them until the finals are over? Like, can they just go away, please?
Well, I guess we have to listen to them first. So, Alabaster, roll the tape.
LeBron, we see each season how you kind of add or tweak something with your game. Or is there anything you've identified coming off of this season that you really want to focus in or kind of work on this offseason?
Yeah, I want to get to the free throw line. So I want to figure out how to trick the refs. I'm 19 years in, and going after a scoring title when you're not making the postseason is the most wackest thing ever.
Raise your hand if you fully expected him to go for the scoring title. I fully expected him to do that. And it's like wackest thing ever, really? Because I legit thought that's exactly what you were going to do.
Most wackest.
Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah, on the list of wackest things, I feel like it's going for the scoring title when you're out of the playoffs and then lying about how you didn't go for the scoring title while out of the playoffs while actually going for the scoring title, incidentally.
The most wackest.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look.
I just felt that I never was given a fair chance just to be who I needed to be able to help this team.
I love that.
Oh, he's
Raise your hand if you had that one in the preseason.
I had that one in the postseason. I love that. I wasn't given the chance to be who I needed to be. Who doesn't relate to that? Is there a human being on this earth that just looks at themselves in the mirror and says, I wasn't given the chance to be who I could be. It is your fault, not my fault.
If I was given a chance to be who I could be, I think Highly Questionable would still be on the air. So I can totally relate with Russell Westbrook right here.
Not familiar with that program. Not familiar
with
it.
Sorry about that.
But the question of, like, what does Russell Westbrook actually have that's defensible and not highly questionable, as it were? I mean, seriously though, Izzy, what else could he have wanted? Like, I understand at a certain point, right, Russell Westbrook chafed with Frank Vogel. I understand that Frank Vogel was not playing him in close games at the end of games, but that came pretty late in the larger game of the season, right? So when Russ says, I'm not sure what his issue was with me, or I'm not sure why, but I can't really give you an answer to why we never really connected, I don't know. Again, I watched you play basketball. It seems not surprising that it went this way.
And let me say this about Frank. Like, you know, as much many people are lamenting all season long, they've seen a lot of Lakers games on national television. So a handful of us have covered Lakers games before on national television and talked to these coaches beforehand. And they're a little looser in these situations, right? Because they trust, hey, some of this stuff's going to be off the record. Some of this stuff's going to be on. And Frank had every opportunity to bash Russ every time I was there. And he never did. Even when it was off the, like, it was like, you know, on the record, he had basically a bunch of lines, but off the record, he would never trash them. He would just be like, I mean, you guys are seeing what I'm seeing as well. So it basically comes down to the basic idea of what we all thought to be true. Russell Westbrook needs the ball to be effective because he's not going to be efficient. So he's going to need the ball and going to need to do a lot of things with it. And that's just not going to happen with LeBron. And in this case, just LeBron, because AD missed a bunch of the season. It's just never going to happen. And so that's what this was. And it's not even Russ being stubborn, in my opinion. It's just Russ recognizing what he offers on a basketball court, which is why, you know, even a team like Indiana is rumored to potentially still be interested in him. Because if you want somebody to be the center of your universe, he still has that opportunity to do that. And in his mind, the ability to do that.
I love Jacoby. Did you see what Izzy just did there? He did one of the most skillful tricks of journalism I think I've ever heard, which is he didn't violate off-the-record conversations. He didn't violate the contents of them. He said what was not in them, which is a description of an off-the-record conversation that gets on the record but also exonerates. That's actually brilliant. And I just want to, really, for the record, I have never trashed either of you off the record either.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Russell Westbrook. Well, Jacoby, there's this. Can you? What's this card saying to you? The Westbrook card that's on the screen right now.
Okay, Westbrook on LeBron and AD saying, "Let Russ be Russ." Yeah, but that wasn't true. So Russ wasn't allowed to be Russ. But this was actually one of the most Russ seasons that ever has been Russ in the history of Russing. This was very Russ. But I will say this one thing, that sometimes you have to look in the mirror and remember who you were. In October, I was the guy who just watched Russell Westbrook with the Wizards. Do you remember Russell Westbrook with the Wizards at the end of the season last season? Those last 15 games?
Refresh our memory.
He was phenomenal. Like, he was carrying this Wizards team with just bit parts to win after win after win. And when he was added to that roster, I was one of the people that was like, this Lakers team is going to be an absolute juggernaut. You can call it injuries. You can call it chemistry problems. You can call it inefficiency from Russell Westbrook.
But you still believe they might be.
Do you know who it was? It wasn't Frank Vogel's fault. I'll say that. It was not Frank Vogel's fault. It's not. I mean, Frank Vogel won a championship with the Lakers defense in the bubble. He's a defensive coach. He's a defensive mastermind. And they took away all of his defensive players. There's not a defensive player on the entire roster. And it's like, oh, Frank Vogel, you didn't get it done. It's
saying,
like,
no two-way players.
Starting LeBron at center and Russell Westbrook at point guard is not a great way to start a defense.
No. And also, I love the Shams tweet that was like, they're looking for a recent championship coach to replace Frank Vogel. It's like, wait a second. 2 years ago, he was a champion. And then you got Coach Bud, and then before that, no one else is available.
Nick Nurse. So there's this delusion about Nick Nurse, who, by the way, is under contract with the Raptors, that I think is rightfully offensive to everybody who's familiar with both the Lakers and every team that's not the Lakers, where it's like, why the hell do you think you can just pick whoever you want? under contract and just say, you want this giant mess? I bet you do.
It's like the Knicks fans do this all the time. Like, we're going to put Zion on the team or put Dame on the team. It's like, well, guess what? No one else is doing that. Alabaster?
One of my favorite parts about this entire thing is the rumor that Sam Amick floated out there that LeBron would be very enthused about clutch client Mark Jackson as the head coach of the Lakers after he, in his exit interview, said that he is not actually controlling player personnel and he's just gives suggestions to the front office that they may or may not listen to. It's like, you
well,
know,
this is where we'll find that out, right?
The coach too.
This is where we'll find that out, whether, you know, Jeannie and Rob Pelinka and everybody out there like actually have control or want to take control over their organization, or if they're going to sort of see this LeBron thing through at the end, because they've already made the big jump with Westbrook. And so now it's just like, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to take the hit here, or are we going to continue to lay it on you, who, you know, everybody assumes was the decision maker there?
It does feel like it's one of those projects where everybody except for Russ is like going to start pitching in on how do we trade Russell Westbrook. Because LeBron James, right? Look, LeBron has this extension. He's up for a 2-year extension for $97 million this August, right? He does not want another season, and Russ has one more season. He can opt into his last year of the deal, I believe. He doesn't want that. And so when LeBron is saying, I can only control what I can control after Frank Vogel gets fired, behind the scenes.
Denial.
Yeah, you imagine that everybody is in some boardroom, literal or virtual, and they're saying to themselves, like, Are we now Googling, like, can we trade Russell Westbrook for Julius Randle? Like, what are we doing now? Like, what actually can you do?
No, the Shams report was that they'd want to trade him into the Eastern Conference. Like, are you afraid of him going in the Western Conference and then, like, usurping yourself? Did you watch him play basketball for the last, like, 8 months? Like, we can't trade Russell Westbrook in the conference because then he'll be extremely inefficient for someone who we're competing against. Oh, God.
All right,
I tweeted
speaking
it three
of efficiency,
times already, bro.
We'll
Jacoby,
yet again.
We need you to tweet the actual tweet link to the broadcast. You keep tweeting the image to preview the show.
Oh,
but
please.
No one can watch that.
Details.
Look, he's 44 years old.
Happy birthday.
Come on.
Details. Oh, God.
He's figuring out how this all works.
All right, I'm tweeting it now. You're the worst.
I guess in terms of, like, funny places Russ could wind up, I mean, part of me is, like, can the Thunder just get involved again? Can they be in this? Because I feel
Sam Presti's the MVP, so he can do anything.
Can we have Nas involved? Remember, Nas was the reason that Paul George stayed.
So the Thunder thing, real quick, is funny to me because beyond the fact that Russell Westbrook would be back in Oklahoma City in this hypothetical trade that does not exist that I'm now inventing, but you do basically need a team with a ton of cap space to absorb both Russell Westbrook and charge a fee, like a garbage disposal fee, where it's like, we will take this couch off of your hands, we'll move this gross couch out of your apartment, but you gotta pay us to do it. Mm. And the price would be more draft picks. The problem, of course, that the Lakers, I believe, have no, like, their next four draft picks are all, like, already in other deals because of the Anthony Davis thing. And so they'd have to put picks in, like, 2026 into the deal. But the Thunder is kind of the one team where I think they don't care about that because they're currently like scouting 12-year-olds into like 2040.
Yeah,
so
but they're
Park
past
is like,
Russell at this point. No, I think they've moved past Russell. You can't bring that back, and you just have to celebrate what you had. You can't bring that back. I'm crazy intrigued by the idea of Indiana because like Rick Carlisle and Russell Westbrook as a pair of like malcontents, like that would be quite like they didn't supposedly like him in Dallas, and now you're supposed to get Westbrook and him to get along. That would be quite interesting.
Russell Westbrook goes,
although
from
nobody would pay attention to it.
Well, he goes from accusing Frank Vogel of being a liar to being able to accuse a guy who looks like the guy who played the title character in Liar Liar as a liar, which would be incredible.
Do you think that looked like Frank Vogel? I've heard that before.
You do?
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Oh, the buzz. Yeah, I can see that a little bit. Defensive-minded. I don't know how sweaty Frank Vogel is,
I'm
but that would
sweaty.
Be a point in his column. I know
sweaty.
You are. Yeah. Alabaster, sorry. You sweatily tried to put a card down and then backed away meekly. So.
Sorry, one of the things I find most fascinating about a potential Russell Westbrook trade is, like you said, we go through the options a little bit. Say it's OKC. They don't want Russell Westbrook russing and getting in the way of the development of Josh Giddey and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and what other handful of lottery picks they draft this year. Then Indiana, that's when we go directly into the LeBron media machine. let's trade Russell Westbrook, a bad player, for good players in Miles Turner and Malcolm Brogdon.
And let's
also have him delay the development of Tyrese Halliburton, who we just invested in, because that will just 2K and help the Lakers. The problem with Russ is that the paradox of how Russ plays make him an unappealing trade candidate, even as an expiring contract for these bad teams.
Yeah, the teams that are tanking are actually trying to tank smarter now. And so, Alabaster says it, right? They want to give minutes to the players they want to potentially keep as opposed to just lose on purpose straight up. And so Russell Westbrook is sort of boxed out of that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on what you're looking at in terms of building, because if the Pacers can get out of a contract, you know, $45 million after a year and sort of rebuild maybe around Halliburton, then, I think that seems like a decent plan. I love like the Oklahoma City Thunder stuff. Like, we must protect these players at all costs. The players, what, that lost by 50, like 10 times this year? Like, I think if they were like surprisingly great players that we would see that they're great players and not just, you know, on a rebuilding team.
When you watch the Thunder and the Trailblazers the last 3 weeks, I literally had to Google every single person on the floor. Like, both of those teams, I was like, I watched the NBA pretty closely. When the Trailblazers took the floor, I was like, who are these human beings getting paid to play basketball? Because I've literally never heard of them before.
Yes. And I guess I'm mostly shocked now, Jacoby, that I think about it, that Izzy has not turned this topic into a LeBron goes back to the Heat discussion.
Are the Heat the most undiscussed number one seed in the history of the NBA?
They only got mentioned right here because I talked about LeBron demanding a trade to them. So
And I would have laughed at that before I saw Eric Spoelstra throw a clipboard at Jimmy Butler. Then I thought, hey, you know what? LeBron for Jimmy Butler might work.
He threw it at the ground. It was in a direction. Jimmy Butler.
It was clearly in a direction of Jimmy Butler.
As I say, he threw a proximity mine of a clipboard in the vicinity and it exploded. Alabaster, I don't know how much else we can talk
can
about.
We not
the
talk about the Lakers
without
anymore,
triggering
please, Alabaster.
Truly
we did it.
Deep
we
self-loathing.
Did it. We talked about the Lakers. You win. Please move on.
I appreciate it. It was insightful. It was funny. You guys crushed it. But let's move on to the other play-in game where there are actually good basketball teams playing. But both these teams have been sort of punching bags for the media, whether it was, you know, Karl Towns and D'Angelo Russell and the Wolves or Playoff P. We have sort of roasted these teams. Our question, if one of these teams wins tonight and goes on a run in the playoffs, would your opinion change more of the T-Wolves or the Clippers?
To me, like, the number one, like, character development in the NBA has actually been Karl Anthony Towns. And I say that because every time I just burped while discussing Karl Anthony Towns.
Burp take.
Whenever I watch Karl Anthony Towns, he is...
You throw up a little bit in your mouth.
I have a little bit of acid reflux. I begin to taste what I had for breakfast. And then I watch and marvel at a guy who's just like taking it to the rim and yamming on people. He's a dominant offensive player in ways that, look, he's always been very good offensively. But now there is this level of just like badass toughness to him. And he says it. I mean, again, some of this maybe is him trying to convince himself, Izzy, you're already tilting
your
head skeptically. But he says, we're a swaggy team. We know anytime we step on the basketball court, we can beat anyone in the world. And part of me wonders, like, him being gassed up by Anthony Edwards, the best quote in sports, a guy who also loves yamming. Like, I root for this. I root for Karl Anthony Towns and his personal revolution.
I do. I mean, I love the team. Like, I love the way they play. I love that they can give you 150 at any given time. You know, I love that Karl Anthony Towns, man, I feel like he's, this is going to sound terrible, right? Because the comp is not the same, right? But in today's NBA, he's like Sam Perkins 2.0. Like, he can give you like on a pump fake on the perimeter, but then he'll just go yam it on you. I know, it's crazy. My brain works sometimes when it comes to these big guys that can shoot.
It's a great pull, Jacoby, and I think this is the first time I've literally ever heard Sam Perkins as a comparison on any form of ESPN air.
And I'll give it like 4.0, okay? So not 2.0, like 4.0.
Yeah.
But still, that's,
Sam Perkins
that's kind of like
Apple
what comes to my head.
To like the MacBook that is Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah,
there it is.
I'm with you there.
He's Sam Perkins with LTE.
On this game.
Yeah.
I do think
that they could be fun. I don't think they can be consistent. That's basically my take on the T-Wolves.
I think the Grizzlies are susceptible to a first round tough series. The Grizzlies are the media darling. We love them so much. But the winner of this game is going to take the Grizzlies at least six. Like, this is not, this isn't, oh, this yeah. isn't, this is going to be a tough series. I think that the Grizzlies are, we love them so much. Oh my God, they're so good without John Morant. They just got Dylan Brooks back. They're amazing. Jaren Jackson, Defensive Player of the Year. Like, we worship at the Grizzlies altar all season long. However, in the playoffs, I expect this to be a long series. I expect the winner of tonight's Western Conference game to give the Grizzlies problems. I expect them to take one of two in the first two games in Memphis. And I expect that we're going to be on this show next week being like, are the Grizzlies in trouble? Note that.
This is how this works, right? So they have like an ensemble cast around John Morant who play amazingly well when he's not there and play amazingly well when he is there, right? But you get to the playoffs and Ja's back after missing an extended period of time and only having a couple of games at the end of the regular season. And then all of a sudden Desmond Bane misses two shots and it's like, okay. And then Triple J misses a couple of shots and it's like, all right. Ja, you've got to fix this for us. Get us right. And then that's the way the mentality is going to be. It's not going to be, hey, everybody in this, we're all doing this together the way we did in the regular season. It's like, there's a lot of pressure here. Ja, you do this. And that's what they haven't really had to do all season long, especially against teams that can game plan against you over, you know, the course of 2 weeks. So I'm with you there. I think it's at least a six-game situation, and for different reasons, right? Because the Timberwolves can just explode on you offensively.
Yes.
The Clippers can lock you down and just really frustrate you if, you know, Paul George is there doing his thing. So, yeah, 100% agreement. I wouldn't even be shocked if they're a first-round upset. I think that's
next week,
like one
I'll
step
be on this
far,
show on Tuesday, and we're going to be talking about the Grizzlies in trouble. I promise you that.
We're going to be talking about Russell Westbrook and then the Grizzlies in trouble.
Yeah, we'll start with the Lakers somehow. Somehow Alabaster is going to make us talk about the Lakers next Tuesday in the middle of the playoffs.
But here's why it's especially annoying to be hearing about the Lakers if you're like a basketball fan in Los Angeles even. And it's because, yes, the dancing silhouettes of AD and LeBron are literally obscuring facts about the Clippers that we could be talking about. Because there is this card that says a very important thing. Paul George, back from injuries, averaging 22.6 points a game. And the Clippers have won six of their last seven. And the Clippers, again, knocked out the Jazz after losing Kawhi in the postseason last year, right? Took the Suns to the limit, six games at the very least. And so what is so interesting to me about the Clippers is the fact that waiting in the wings, let's say the Clippers beat the T-Wolves.
Don't do it.
Ja Morant may be staring down the robotic face of Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, don't do it.
He might do it. He might be back. And guess what? What a nightmare. What a nightmare for everyone else in the NBA. If what I have long suspected is true, Jacoby, which is that Kawhi Leonard load managed an entire NBA regular season and is back to make a run and fully live the nightmare of Adam Silver.
100%, like that team has a couple of guys that have benefited from either getting away or staying away from LeBron James. Ty Lue getting away from LeBron James to, wow, this guy can actually coach. Everybody just thought he was LeBron's sidekick, whatever. And then Kawhi Leonard never teaming up with LeBron James because, look, he's missed more games than Anthony Davis, right? And we're talking, sitting here talking about Anthony Davis being the guy that we joke on. And now Kawhi Leonard's like, no, I'm just going to take the whole year off and come back like, I don't know, the Terminator 2 in the playoffs and just, it's over for you guys. And the reputation is not nearly the same. So, yeah, sometimes it's good to stick to LeBron. Sometimes it's good to stay away from him.
Yeah, be the team that no one actually is contractually obligated to talk about, allegedly.
Before Kawhi Leonard got hurt, like, he was bodying the Mavs in the playoffs. Like, he was insane what he was doing. He was the best player on the floor, including Luka Doncic, and he was an absolute machine. I can't imagine a world in which he just, like, descends from the suite where he watched the playoffs last year and puts on a uniform and plays in the postseason for the first time. But, like, I don't think it's impossible. But one thing I will say, and which is not popular in the world of sports media, I have no idea who's going to win this game tonight. If you ask me to pick Timberwolves or Clippers, I honestly, like, I've got my little betting apps. I'm staying away from this one. I have no idea who's going to win this game, but I know the winner of this game is going to give the Grizzlies trouble.
Well, it's funny to say this when the Suns have dominated the Western Conference or the league so much this year, but the West feels wide open.
Disagree.
When you talk about the number two being a young Grizzlies. No, disagree. I'm not saying that the Suns are going to lose. I'm just saying that outside the Suns, if like something terrible happens, Devin Booker goes down, Ayton goes down, through eight.
I agree with that. I would say two through eight, I could see any team beating another team in a seven-game series. the Suns are you know, favorites. I mean, we all expect the Suns to come out of the finals, but yes, let's not forget every playoffs stars get hurt. Last year, Chris Paul got hurt. I mean, we forget about that, but like he could barely lift his shoulder over his head. I mean,
it's so true. It's a thing where like he revealed like to JJ Redick, like, hey, did you notice how I didn't shoot at all? And we're like, oh, right, you didn't shoot at all after you got couldn't do that. No, I mean, look, yeah, the fragility of the human meat sack is always the story of the playoffs. We go into it being like, ah, look at all these logical arguments. And then, yeah, like, and by the way, the line, speaking of like, let's put some logic into this argument. Yeah, the line currently is Timberwolves -3.5. And I don't feel confident in that.
But I think, Izzy, you do make a good point that outside, the Suns are preemptive favorites. We all expect the Suns to be in the finals. But if something happens to that team, the rest of 2 through 8, whatever that 8 is, like outside of like the, you know, the Pelicans and the Spurs, who I don't think can make any noise, I could see any other team beating any other team in a 7-game series. And that's usually
and
not
keep an
the
eye
case.
On the one guy.
That is not the case in the East. One guy. Like the Bulls and the Cavs are beating nobody in a 7-game series. Nobody.
No. The Bulls, I mean, man, they might not win a quarter in these playoffs because they've been playing so poorly. But let's keep an eye on the one guy that can neutralize the Suns, and that's Scott Foster. Okay, because last year's finals between the Bucks and Suns, not exactly a television masterpiece, right, in terms of viewership. And so it looks like there might be a rematch of that. Maybe like 7 straight games of Scott Foster in the Western Conference Finals will fix everything.
Yeah, Alabaster, we can get out on this because we'll get us in trouble. I'll get us in trouble, but like, I don't understand how Scott Foster is still refereeing like Western Conference Finals. Like the one dude in the Tim Donaghy scandal that was linked is the guy who was signing these big games. Sure, why not? Hey,
this is the part where I remind you that we have difficulties, a $10 billion partnership with the NBA. We should probably move on. $10 billion.
I was gonna put down allegedly, but Pablo,
you are very
that wasn't even alleged. Though he was actually linked to it. So
on the record.
That's I am it? Allegedly. That's the allegedly show. Wow.
We had another topic, but no more Pablo.
Alabaster, you're kicking us off.
What you got?
Can we talk about how the Celtics, how desperately the Celtics had to get off that 4 seed? Like,
wait, come on. But I think there's 2 topics. Let's talk about the Lakers some more. What's
happening? The real topic here is what Jacoby's going to do with the rest of his birthday. I mean, you got
Benihana, baby.
Seconds.
Hibachi, 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 hibachi. You got the kids at Benihana.
Ooh, so we know what you're doing the night of your birthday.
That's the key. I was just like, whatever.
You'll be watching on your phone from a toilet if you're going to Hibachi first.
Oh, we're going to Benihana. Last time I was at Benihana, I saw Beatles. What's his name? John.
Paul McCartney?
Paul McCartney at Hibachi. At Benihana. Last time I was there, me and him were the only white people at Benihana. Last time I was there, I expect him to be there this evening.
Jacoby's credibility with the demographic that he works so often with just jumped massively. Didn't realize.
We have to put a pin in that. We have to finish that story next time.
I forgot his name. John Lennon's the other guy. Come on. I was. This is
what is the ladybugs? What was that man?